Hey, hey, welcome to Sunday Messages with Fairmount Friends Church. So glad to have you with us today. You can learn more on our website, fairmountfriends.church, or find our church app on Tithely. Let's go.
I want to say happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, and it's not lost on me that it would be a tough day for some if the father in your life wasn't always amazing, or perhaps you've lost your father along the way, or it could just be a tough day. But at the risk of being able to celebrate men today, we do want to do that. And not to hurt anyone or to highlight any sort of pain, but there have been a lot of good fathers who have done a lot of things right. We have a great model in God, and God has always been an amazing father. He's never left us. He's never walked out on the family. He always provides. He always protects. He always believes in his family. He does whatever it takes to make sure that his family gets through. And so we want to not only just do this day in honor of a good heavenly father, but we want to celebrate what it is to be a man today. It seems like in today's society, you can't speak about having strong male leadership because you immediately want to marry that with toxicity or too strong of masculinity can be toxic. And I just want to say this. I would just say that if a man is too strong and it becomes abusive, that could be toxic. But when a man is strong and he leads and his leadership is pointed in a way that brings life to those around him, that is good male leadership. And we need more and more of that today. We don't need men to take a backseat. We need strong men of God to take a step forward and to lead us well. And so many times in my messages, I know that I have a tendency to challenge men. This morning, men, you can breathe easy. You can take the steel-toed boots off because I won't be stepping on any toes. I'm here to celebrate men and those men that want to lead well. And there's nothing wrong with having some strength in our leadership as men. Dustin, I believe that me and you this morning have something to celebrate because this past week was Quaker Haven Camp, and we as fathers, we can be proud to know that our children were the ones that won the award. Dustin's daughter, Kira, is the best female dancer of the whole Quaker Haven camp. I mean, come on, that's a pretty big deal. And I am the proud father of the best male dancer of Quaker Haven camp. Oh, man, I've always wanted to be a part of a boy band, but maybe I'll have to live through vicariously my son, because he's got the dance moves. I want to have a little bit of fun here this morning as it comes to man needs. And men, I'm sure you can agree with me here. What a man needs and what women thinks they heard what his needs are. And those are worlds apart, okay? What a man needs is a man needs a sense of risk. A sense of adventure. What a wife thinks he needs is for her to tell him to put his seatbelt on every single time we get in the car. Are you kidding me? A man needs a sense of discovery. What a wife thinks he needs is someone to babysit him as he's pulling into the parking lot and telling him where he should have parked every single time he pulls into Meijer. It's like, man, I had one adventure today. That was it. I just wanted to find my own parking spot. I couldn't even find my own parking spot without her telling me where to go. She comes walking out of the bathroom and she says, "Who didn't put the toilet seat down? If I wasn't paying attention, I could have slid right in." I come out of the bathroom and I say, "Who put the toilet seat down? If I wasn't paying attention, I could have got the whole thing wet." She asks me, "How are you doing?" I think, oh, she cares. Like, she's checking in on my day. But when she asks, "How are you doing?" what she really means is, "How am I actually doing on getting her honey-do list done?" So how are you doing? What we're after here today, I believe, is we want to cultivate in men, cultivating toughness in a world that's gone soft. If you want to have a good male experience this morning, I encourage you to go shake the hand of Jeremy Mason. Jeremy, I shook your hand this morning and it felt like a bear paw, just like wrapped around my hands. After you're done shaking, I shook your hand this morning. I got 3 splinters just shaking your hand. I mean, it was impressive what's going on inside of that guy's hand. Cultivating some toughness in a world that's gone soft. 2 big resources that I'll be using this morning is the Hard Man podcast as well as Facing Nolan. It's a documentary on Nolan Ryan, and you can get it on Netflix, and I encourage you to watch this. In the third inning of a game between the Texas Rangers and the Chicago White Sox on August 4th, 1993, Robin Ventura stepped to the plate for the Sox. The two teams had developed a fierce enough rivalry that the Chicago players decidedly and collectively that they were going to, before the game, whoever got plunked by the first pitch, they were going to charge the mound. And if they didn't charge the mound, the team would fine them $500. The problem was is that the man on the mound had a reputation for throwing inside to intimidate hitters. He wasn't just any pitcher either. He threw 100-mile-an-hour heaters. In fact, he had hit 158 batters during his illustrious career. At the plate, Ventura, a left-handed hitter, he recoiled inward as a fastball encroached his personal space, and the pitch struck the 26-year-old Ventura square in the back. For a moment, he hesitated. Maybe he was thinking about the $500 that he would owe his teammates. Maybe he was thinking twice about the imposing Texan who was standing just 60 feet away. It wasn't just that he was about to charge the mound in a major league game. It was the fact that he was about to throw hands with a Paul Bunyan-sized legend on this diamond, the man that everyone called Big Tex. But maybe Ventura held the advantage of youth. The man on the mound was 20 years his senior. Surely, as a 26-year-old young buck, I can take on this 46-year-old Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan, in just a minute, had Ventura in a headlock, like he had been wrestling a steer to the ground on his Texas ranch. And Ryan repeatedly pounded Ventura's face and head with his fists. It became one of the most iconic moments in this legendary career of the Nolan Express. Ryan got the best of the young men as sports photographers captured this iconic moment for ages to come. And when the famous photos were printed, many came with this simple yet profound caption: Robin Ventura, the only player in Major League history to get 6 hits off of Nolan Ryan in one game. Let's go to the clip, shall we? Let's watch this.
Here's Ventura, RBI single in the first. Watch out. Look at this. Robin took exception to the pitch and went after Nolan Ryan.
He delayed for a second. There they go.
Well, Rodriguez comes up, grabs Robin from behind. Now he turns Nolan around and gets him in a spot. And here's where you get going right there when the 2 guys come up and grab you. Now 3 got him.
Well, you can see that Nolan was hitting Robin right on the top of his head, so he probably hurt his hand a little bit in that thing, and he did get one good lick in on an uppercut.
They're probably going to allow Nolan Ryan to stay in the game, and they're going to throw Robin. Here's Ventura.
Come on. That's pretty awesome right there. So in today's day and age, both of these guys would have been kicked out and suspended. They kicked Ventura out for charging the mound, and they let Nolan Ryan stay in the game. Said, Nolan, you can do whatever you want, man. Ain't nobody going to be clowning with this guy. If you're getting punched in the head and in the face by a cattle rancher from Texas, You kind of let that guy do whatever he wants to do. Nolan Ryan, whenever he started early in his career, he won a World Series with the 1969 Miracle Mets. And then he pitched a lot of his career through Anaheim Angels, through Texas Rangers, Houston Astros. He had an illustrious career that spans, it's record-setting more than anybody that's ever played. But back whenever they were just starting to track the speed of his fastball, the technology wasn't quite up to snuff, and he was recording 100 and 101 miles per hour. As they go back and look at the tape, and as technology has increased, he really was throwing about 108, 109 mile an hour, more than anybody that has ever thrown a baseball. This guy was just another level. He pitched for 27 seasons. Now, guys, you get about six seasons in, and then you have Tommy John surgery, and you're finished. He pitched for nearly three decades, had 5,714 career strikeouts. Now, to put this into perspective, number two, Randy Johnson, who came in second, is nearly 1,000 strikeouts behind Nolan Ryan to take second place. More than anything, Nolan Ryan, he embodied one masculine characteristic in particular that I want to highlight, and that is manly toughness. He broke various strikeout records. He pitched five no-hitters before the age of 38. All-time record before that had been the legend Sandy Koufax, who was Nolan's hero. But he only threw four career no-hitters. Nolan would finish his career with seven no-hitters, but what's really impressive is what he did after the age of 40. After the age of 40, man, and let's talk about, is it possible to get better as we get older? It's a good question. Men, is it possible that your best days are still ahead? Is it possible to get better as we age? What we're going to talk about is taking care of ourselves, men, so that we can continue to shine as our days get longer. Our bodies, our families, our craft, our occupation, what we've given our lives to, that we would get better, and that we would become inspiring to the men who are around us. Look at how his career progressed from when he was 39 until he was 46, Nolan did his best pitching. Between the ages of 19 and 28, he averaged 9.5 strikeouts per nine innings. Between the ages of 29 and 38, he averaged 9.2 strikeouts per innings. But between the ages of 39 and 46, he averaged 10.1 strikeouts per nine innings, and he even notched two of his seven no-hitters while in his 40s. So the question today, how is it possible that we can get better with age? While others are fading, we continue shining. At the back of his pitching career, Nolan Ryan was pitching for the Texas Rangers. In his first game as a Ranger, he pitched several marginally bad innings. And the Rangers pitching coach, Tom House, he comes up to the mound mid-game for a little intervention. And House tells the story that, "I said to him, Nolan, how are you doing out here? He said, awful, Tom, but it's a whole lot better than that horse, you know what, warming up in the bullpen, so get the heck off my mound." Later, he went on and described the story, and House said, "This is how I responded. I'm talking to Big Tex, and so whenever I had that horse warming up in the mound, and he told me to get the heck off of his mound, guess what I did? I got the heck off of his mound." Look at what the Apostle Paul tells men to behave like. This is how he wraps his letter in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. He says, "Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, and let all that you do be done in love." Let's break down this Greek word here that we see in Paul as he's writing here in 1 Corinthians. It's androzeamoia. And here's what this word is. It literally means be a man or be men. And so whenever he's describing to men, stand firm, stand up, get a spine, and lead and act like men and be bold and be brave and do it with love, but be a man as you're leading. Paul then doesn't spend the next three chapters trying to explain what it is to be a man. They actually knew what one was back then. They weren't confused if they were men. They weren't confused on what it meant to be tough. They weren't confused on their gender. They weren't confused on what the role of a man should be. They knew who they were. And so when he says, hey, be a man, they go, we know exactly what that means. We don't need you to pontificate more and more and try to break down what it means to be a man or to be male. We know what you're talking about, Paul. It's only mentioned one time. This word is only mentioned one time in the New Testament. But if we go to the Old Testament and we look how the original language was written, and we go back to what is called the Septuagint, it's whenever the scriptures were originally put together, we see that it's listed 25 times in how God originally, in the Old Testament, originally wanted men to be men. Joshua, he shows this word, androzeomai, how it's translated from Hebrew into Greek, from this and now how we use it into the English language. Look at how Joshua says this in Joshua chapter 1. And it's this, it's the same word, androzeomai, many times over. He goes this in Joshua chapter 1, starting verse 6, be strong and of good courage. In verse 7, only be strong and very courageous. Verse 9, have I not commanded you? Be strong and be of good courage. Verse 18, be strong and of good courage. He's basically saying, be like a man. He's not saying that we can't have fear. He goes, but we overcome fear with courage. He's like, do it scared. Even if you're scared, have enough courage to engage in the game. Hey, I don't think that Robin Ventura is going to be on a boxing circuit at any time soon, but he had enough courage to charge the mound. He's forever made fun of in Major League history because he got beat bad by a man 20 years his senior, but he had enough courage to do it. Man, I want to say, be like Robin Ventura and charge the mound in whatever it is that you're doing. What is it? The business. If it's leading your family, if it's taking on something, what is it? And stop playing small. You get one shot at this thing. One life. I've sat in way too many nursing homes and I look at people, I look them in the eyes, and the eyes are full of regret. And they know it's over. And there's no going back. There's no going back and taking that risk and doing the thing that they want to and living like Paul said, come on, stand firm and let's go. Lead. Act like a man. And there's no going back. And so you get one shot at it. Run off the diving board, tuck your knees, and let's make the biggest splash as possible with our lives. Come on, let's go. And let's lead like the men of God that we're called to lead. One translation even says, play the man. Play the role of the man. If the man was going to walk into this situation right now, what would that character do in this story? I need to do that. I need to play the role of the man in this situation. If it's in our community, if it's in my marriage, if it's with my children, if it's whatever areas I am, step into that role and lead like a man. And we don't need to go into a whole lot of explanations. Paul just says, be the man. Check out this picture right here. It's hard to imagine today in an era in which starting pitchers, they rarely make it to 100 pitches. This is a picture of Nolan Ryan, and it's whenever he got his number three, his third no-hitter with the Anaheim Angels. Pitchers today, they're on a pitch count. They don't even go 100 pitches trying to save their shoulders and elbows. But Ryan prided himself in pitching the whole game as often as he possibly could. His toughness, seriously, has been unmatched, not only 40 years ago, but still today. Players, and we have way better doctors and medicine and strength training and all that sort of stuff, but none of them have been able to be as tough as Nolan Ryan. Just check this out. Just in 2019, for example, a complete game was thrown by just 22 pitchers and 2,042 MLB starts. But across his career, Ryan alone threw a massive 222 complete games just by himself. Talk about a man of endurance. This is an Iron Man. In 1974, Ryan, who was then pitching for the Angels, he pitched a complete game against the Boston Red Sox. The game lasted a whopping 13 innings. So not only did he pitch nine, most guys pitch five. He pitched nine and then pitched four more on the tail end of that. And for his part, he struck out 19 Sox hitters for a 4-3 win. Perhaps the most impressive thing is what they called the Nolan Express, but he threw 235 pitches that night. Most guys are sticking under 100 pitches. He threw 100, and then he again threw 100, and then he threw 35 more. After warm-ups and after all the pitches between the innings, he probably was somewhere around 500 pitches that night. Consider that since the pitch count started, and it actually was recorded all time, was Tim Wakefield in 1988 in his performance against the Braves. In that game, he threw 172 pitches, which is crazy. And Nolan would have thrown 60 more pitches than that. After getting drafted by the Mets and winning the World Series in 1969, he had to go to work in the off season. Back then, players were not multimillionaires and celebrities walking around. While his teammates were partying in New York, Nolan went back to his home city of Alvin, Texas, and he got a job. What did he do? HVAC work. He's installing heating and air conditioning in Texas in between. He's got a World Series championship ring on his hand, and he is hooking up heating and cooling in people's homes and businesses. He signed a contract for $7,000. He goes, it was barely enough to even live on back then. And so in between off seasons, the guy had to go to work. He would save his money so that he could really live his ultimate passion, which was not baseball, but it was cattle ranching in Texas. And so he finally was able to buy his dream career in his own ranch in Texas. Man, if you're anything like me, your toughness scale varies based upon your health. When I'm feeling good, I can work 16 hours a day. But if I get a cold, I'm out. If I get a runny nose, I'm the weakest man that you would ever know. If I get a little chest cold or a cough, a little head cold, any other men, and you don't have to raise your hand, but your wife can, she'll know. You know that you can work all day long, but if little buddy gets a cold, you're gonna be wiped out. And here is what is it that we could really be the measuring stick of toughness. Nolan, I believe, is a man that is marked by toughness. In one of his games on May 1st, 1991, at Arlington Stadium, he's having this excruciating back pain that is hitting him, and he wasn't sure how long that he could pitch that day or even pitch at all. And he walks into the dugout, and he told the Rangers manager, who is Bobby Valentine. Bobby Valentine at the time was 40. Nolan Ryan was 44. So he's older than his coach, and he's in the dugout, and he tells him, he goes, this may be it. And whenever he said this may be it, he wasn't talking about going out and throwing a perfect game. He said this may be it, talking about retirement. I may not be able to continue to do this. The pain was so intense that morning, his wife Ruth had to put his shoes on for him and tie them just so that he could show up to the park and go out and play. He walks out of the dugout and he turns around and he says, have a guy ready in the bullpen because this may be it. And it was it, all right, but it was not anything that looked like retirement. He was throwing his best stuff this game. With an arm that was held together by duct tape, seemingly, he goes out to the mound and he throws one of the best games of his life. The idea for Coach Valentine, he thought, if this is it, then I not only need to get somebody ready in the bullpen, but start making changes in the team. He had the extra stuff going on this game, and according to Jeff Houston, who played with Ryan, he said he had an extra gear on his fastball that day. Houston, who was playing shortstop for Texas that night, he said you could hear it. You could hear the ball from shortstop. Steve Buscelli, who was playing third base that night, he said that we were jogging off the field after the first inning, and we just kind of looked at each other, and we said, it's over. Out of the 27 outs that Ryan recorded, 16 came by strikeouts. His game score is a metric that they use to evaluate pitching efficiency and performance. It was 101 was his metric game score. So to put that into perspective, it's the highest of all of his seven no-hitters was this game when he felt like he had absolutely nothing. When you feel like you've got nothing, what is the something that you're able to drive up and draw from the deep wells? When you feel like you're depleted and yet you always know that there is more in the tank, men, what can we do to pull from the depths of us to continue to bring our best? When your heart gets dinged and you're not pumped about that 5'6" girl sitting right beside you, how do you swell up those depths and say, I'm going to bring my best? Maybe I'm not even feeling like it. I'm just barely hanging on by some duct tape right now. And you go out and you throw the perfect game. At 44 years old, Ryan had his best stuff of his entire life. He kept getting better with age. Aside from giving up two walks in the game, otherwise it would have been a perfect game. What's maybe more impressive than Ryan's fastball was actually that he kept his family. He gave himself to a career and yet didn't lose his family along the way. He put his family first. He still today is married to his high school sweetheart, Ruth. We got any high school sweethearts in the house? Oh, I see you. Yeah, there it is. As Ryan got older, he sought a trade from Anaheim so that he could move back to Texas to be on the family farm and be around his four sons and his wife, Ruth, who he loved dearly. He didn't want to be across the country. At the time, the Houston Astros were terrible, and the Texas Rangers were even worse. And he said, more important than winning is to be with my family. And so he negotiates this deal with the Texas Rangers because it was close to his family farm. And so as he moves home and he gets this deal, he says, the deal only works if all my sons have access to the training facilities because I want them to come to the games early and be with me so that I can work out with my boys. So they wrote this into his contract, literally, that his family had full access to the park, to the training facilities, to all of the stuff. This is back in the day when guys didn't really work out a whole lot. John Kruk, one time, they said, John, if anybody remembers John Kruk, they said, John, you're a little fat to be an athlete. And John Kruk goes, oh, no. I'm not an athlete. I'm a baseball player. But Nolan took care of his body, and so he's working out. And after one time, after an interview, and he had just thrown a no-hitter, he then is doing an interview with the media, and he hops on a stationary bike to get his cardio in that night after the game and does his interview. The man was committed not only to taking care of himself as he aged, but also to take care of his family. And his family was first, so he signed this deal so that he could be with his family even more. We need examples as men. Perhaps some of you are sitting out there and you're like, man, we need to read some more scripture this morning. We all came to church. We didn't come to baseball history class. And I would say, I agree. Out of 52 weeks of the year, we do need to read the scriptures. But once, is it possible that we could glean that men need examples? We need real-life examples in front of us to see what does it look like. Sometimes theology may be over my head, but if you can point me in the direction and give me a road sign and say, this is the direction to manliness, then I can get inspired and encouraged by that. Just having one off is not a bad thing here. We need a lighthouse. We need a beacon that is calling our ships in a right direction of manliness and of strong male strength. That's not hurtful, that's not abusive, that doesn't forget our families while we pursue our careers. No, it brings our families and leads them well while we go out and crush the calling of God on our lives. It is possible to do both. We need these inspiring stories of physical toughness. I think that we need men to have more experiences where they engage in physical toughness and push off what I believe is a comfort crisis on men today. And punting our comforts and embracing some experiences that will call us into the characteristics of Christ. I love the story of Jesus whenever he's preaching and teaching in the synagogues and the religious folks don't like it. And so they start whispering. They have the meeting in the parking lot afterwards. Like, what do you think about the pastor's message? It's a little bit off today. I don't think that he, you know, whatever. And so they have those meetings, okay? And so as they're having those meetings, those side meetings, they all decide, okay, today is the day. We're going to get a hold of Jesus and we're going to take him out to the hill. Hey, Jesus, you want to go for a walk with us? They take him out to the hill and they're going to push him over the cliff so that he dies. That was what the committee meeting had decided. And so they do like a unanimous vote. They have a really quick monthly meeting. All hearts clear. Mine is, man, let's get him out of here. And so they march Jesus out to the edge of the hill, and they're about to push him off. And I just can't help but believe that there was a man that rose up inside of the godness of him that had some carpenter strength, that had some carpenter biceps to him. And he turns around and he looks at him. He goes, "Not today, fellas." And he walks right through the center of that crowd. And it says that he passed through them, and the Red Sea parted as he leaves. Nobody wanted to clown with Jesus. Nobody wanted to mess with him. There was some physical strength that this man brought to the party. And that's okay, because Jesus never made a mistake, ever. And whenever Jesus flexes, people responded. And it's not bad for a man to have a little flex to him. We live in a day where everything, men, is curated for our comforts. You have a thermostat just so that you won't get too cold. We have a thermostat that we don't get too warm. We have heated steering wheels, and man, those are so nice, aren't they? But hey, are your hands a little cold? We'll heat that thing right up for you. We have heated socks. We have just a manicured existence. And when we embrace so much comfort, I'll tell you, it has the ability to emasculate us just a little bit. It has a tendency just to take away a little bit of the hardships that men were built for. We were designed for this stuff. And in the modern American male, man, we want it as simple as possible, and we want to push off hardships and get as many comforts around us as possible. I want to make a good living so I can get more comfortable in my living. And I just want to encourage you, man, embrace some experiences that might hurt. Okay? First this morning, shake Jeremy Mason's hand, okay? It'll hurt. It'll be a good experience for you. But maybe, what if it's getting outdoors? It's getting some scratches along the way. Women, please do not make your man safe. And please do not rescue your sons from the adventure. Do not steal the adventure from them. Do not rescue them from the battles that God is intentionally setting up for them. If it is hard, allow them, and help them, but allow them to go through it. Stop telling your husband to put a seatbelt on. And I hope that this all ages well and somebody doesn't get into a car accident and they would have had their seatbelt. It's my pastor's fault. I'm not saying that you shouldn't wear your seatbelt. I'm just saying don't babysit him. Can he please, is there anything left in this modern America that can be wild? And he might be like, "Oh, I'm so dangerous. I didn't wear my seatbelt as I drove out to the mailbox." Men, I know that you're aching for it. There's probably something down deep. You're like, "Ugh, I wish I didn't have to live so safe in such a manicured life." There should be something wild about us, men, because we're Adam. We're made from the dirt. We're made in the wild. We were created for this stuff, and everything is going against your creation. It's like, hey, let's just stay inside, and let's be comfortable, and let's just sit, and let's rest. And if you get too much strength around this male stuff, then that's toxic for us, and we can't handle it. And then I want to tell you, let's go. Let's lead. Let's be tender with our women and children, but my gosh, let's lead. And let's go after the life that God has called us to live. One of the stories that I absolutely love, Nolan now, he's leaving Anaheim, and he's moving back to Texas to be with his family. And his son shares this story. He said, "Dad was traded for Anaheim, and we traveled back to Texas." The kids are like 6 and 8 years old. He had 4 sons at the time, so there was more ages than that, but about that age. He said, "Dad had a single cab pickup truck with a bench seat, no seat belts. We sat in the back of the pickup truck going down the highway from California to Texas. Dad brought us entertainment. Each of us got a little pack of Green Army men. And he said, 'Here, you can play with these.' Sometimes we would climb through the cab, through the little window in the back, so that we could be up in the cab. We would sit with Dad, or we would even fall asleep as he was driving. Or sometimes we would just lay in the back of the pickup in the sunshine." Can you imagine that today? I mean, in a culture of safetyism, how many are even freaking out? Just me reading that story. You're like, "Oh my gosh, I can't. I'm like freaking out right now." To me, that sounds like 1970s dream right there. And for others, like, you're having an anxiety attack. Today, the age of softness, like, you've got to be 27 years old, 160 pounds, even sit in the front seat of a car anymore. And then you may not be old enough or big enough. The age of safetyism. There may be something that's saying, why do we need to talk about being tough? Spiritual qualities are the only things that matter. Why we should be talking about being spiritual in here. And I would say that is 100% not true. We are triune. We have a spirit, we have a mind, and we have a body. And we need to be strong in all of them. Not just men that sit around in Bible studies and take care of our spirits. We need men that have a physical toughness. Men that lead inspiring lives that also strengthen the spines of men around them. A toughness that doesn't happen by accident. It happens by intentionality, by getting out there and getting roughed up. By engaging in some activities where you might come home with some scratches and some dings and some bruises. Let's not rescue them from the adventure of masculinity. We need a culture that can cultivate this stuff inside of our young men. Our society is so soft. And please do not be a part of that narrative. Do not help our boys become weak men. Create a culture and a country that is cultivating and crafting strong and courageous men. Andrea Zosoma, be a man. Play the man. And no more of these easy and uninspiring lives, men. We must do hard things. We must engage in a battle that is worth it. Also, the way that he had detail in his craft. Champions are devoted to the details. All-time legends care about all of the little details, like Nolan Ryan. You might see it in the life of somebody like a Peyton Manning. The detail of paying attention. He watched more film than anybody else so that he would know when he walked out there. Cal Newport, he's got a book called Be So Good, They Can't Ignore You. There's something about that inside of a man when it comes to our craft. If you're a teacher, hone in that skill to be the best teacher. If you're a craftsman, be the best craftsman. If you're a farmer, man, dial it in and be the best farmer that you possibly can be. No shortcuts. Crush it in your life. Jamarcus Russell, he played for LSU. He was a quarterback for the Oakland Raiders. He boasted that he never watched any film. Johnny Manziel. He played for Texas A&M, then he kind of bounced around the NFL for a little bit. He boasted that he never watched any film. They gave Jamarcus Russell an iPad and told him, hey, it's loaded up with all the game film. We want you to watch this. What he didn't know, but they did, is they put a tracker on his iPad to see how many minutes or hours he watched game film. Anybody want to take a guess how much he watched? Zero. And he didn't have much of a career because he didn't pay attention to the details of his craft. Zero. And the guy is going, you want to be Johnny Football? Maybe dial it in on becoming excellent at what you do. Malcolm Gladwell, he cited a research paper that says if you want to be excellent, it's the law of is it 10,000? It's 10,000 hours, he says, if you put into something, you will become an expert on that thing. Men, if you've got a call in your life, go all in. Give your best to it. And I'll wrap with this final story. It's September 1990. A 43-year-old Nolan Ryan, he's faced off against the superhuman Bo Jackson. Anybody remember Bo Jackson? Bo knows. Bo knows football. Bo knows baseball. Bo knows cycling. Bo knows basketball. You remember all those commercials, the Bo knows. See a couple of your heads nodding out there, but Bo was the man. And so it's 1990. He's in the prime of his career. He's playing for the Kansas City Royals at this time. It's the second inning, and Jackson, he rips this line drive back to Nolan Ryan. And as he rips it, the ball comes back and smashes Nolan Ryan in the face and slices his lip clean open. Would he leave the game? Would they enter him quickly into the concussion protocol tent, make sure that you're okay. Give you some smellies. Do you need to sit out for 2 weeks and then let's nurse you back to health? Nope. He reached down and grabbed the ball and threw Bo Jackson out at first base. He wipes the blood off on his sleeve and he goes on and he completes the inning. Between innings, he goes into the dugout and they pull out a string and they stitch his lip up and he goes back into the game later. And as he comes back, Big Tex, he just simply licks his lip. He wipes the blood off on his jersey, this white Texas jersey, and he finishes the inning. He goes on to record 17 more outs and strikes out 8 players. Check out this picture. This is the picture of toughness. This is the picture. His lip is hanging off of his face. This is a man where Bo Jackson rips one into your face and you throw him out at first and say, "What else you got, Bo? Bo, you don't know who you're messing with." This is Big Tex right here. This is a picture that hangs in many men's offices just to inspire them. This is how I want to lead. Whenever the next problem comes, I handle it. When the next situation comes, I handle it. I'll get back up again. Whenever I went through that hard situation, I got to get back up. Men, I'll tell you, if dad maybe even left you like this sometimes, you can handle it. Let's go. God can heal you. He can get you to the next place. Men, if you've walked through some hardships, if you've walked through a divorce, you can get back up. You can handle it. If you've been through some hardships with your own children and maybe they've even walked away, they've turned their backs on you, come on. You can handle it. You've got what it takes. Greater is He who is within you than anything else going on in the world. You've got what it takes. Let's develop some toughness in a society that wants to cater to all of your weaknesses. Let's go and let's get some strength that's found only in the God-man, Jesus Christ. Let's strengthen ourselves. Let's play the man. Let's be the man of God that He's called us to be. You can handle it. You might be limping. You might be held together by duct tape. You might be a bloody mess. But you can finish the race and the game that is before you. In 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 9, it says this, "Fight as never before, Philistines. If you don't, you will become the Hebrew slaves just as they have been ours. So stand up and act like men and let's fight. Let's go for it." And I just want to pray a blessing over every man that is here, that you would be strong and courageous, that you would do what God has called you to do. You'd be excellent at what He's called you for. You'd take care of yourself. You'd take care of your family, and that you would shine and run through the finishing line. Finish strong, man. If you're a man in this house, would you stand up? I want to pray over every man that is here and pray a blessing upon you guys. Jesus, I thank you that you have modeled for us what it means to be a man. I thank you, Lord, that you have set a course for us. You are the map guide. You are the example of what it takes for us to lead like men. God, I pray that we would be men that are excellent in our calling. I pray that we would be men that are dialed in on the details. I pray that we would be fathers that lead our families well. Husbands that romance and bring a thrill to our marriages. God, I pray that we would lead in our community, and I pray that you would put a toughness inside of the men in this house. We pray a blessing upon them in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
Grateful you were with us today. Be sure to subscribe and rate us so other people can know about the podcast. Join us on a Sunday morning in Fairmount or find our live stream on YouTube, our website, fairmountfriends.church, or our church app on Tithely. See you soon.